Okay, now from Ventnor, we have Robbie S. on the disciplines of 10 and 11.
I don't get an introduction like the others.
I don't know too much about it.
I wish I could have a little bit of time while you're introducing.
Let me hear.
Hi, guys. I'm Robbie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Because I hate this. Can you hear me now? Yeah? I don't need it? I was just saying, let me just say this. I got nothing, right? And everybody so far has been so amazing, and it's just humbling to be a part of this and be here, and the guys are just going on and on, and I leaned over to Chris and I said, I got nothing now. I'm not sure I can talk for an hour on 10 and 11. I just feel like a mental blank spot, and Chris told me that's good. Keep it that way. So my head is empty. That's a good thing. So who knows what's going to come out today. I have a sponsor. My Friday date's January 7th, 1997. I always say, you know, and we talked about it a little bit earlier tonight, I always say, don't be real impressed with that time. It's not real impressed with yours. Right? The time does not impress me. It's the how free can you be. It's that being free and being connected to God. And that's why we're going to talk today about how we get hooked up and connected. In these first few steps, we learn how to get hooked up to God. We learn how to get hooked up to each other. We learn how to make our relationships right. We learn how to get our wrongs right. We learn how to surrender our life. And now we got to keep it that way, right? So now we got to figure out, in 10 and 11, it tells us how we're going to keep it. It tells us it's our maintenance steps because it continues for a lifetime. So, and I'm going to use a book a little bit today, and I'm going to tell you a little story. Can I really do it without that at all? Like, you in the back, you like, move up. Can I do it without that? I'm so much more comfortable without that. Yeah? I see nobody moving. I have an idea. Why don't we... Yeah.
Reporters.
Why don't we
do reporters?
Yes.
All right, how about this? We're all going to stand up and stretch real quick. Yeah, come on. People are falling asleep already, even you, Chris. Okay, everybody stretch. Everybody stretch, smile, say hi to your neighbor. What? Okay, peace be with you.
And also with you.
Thank you, guys. It's been a long day, and I think it's been amazing. But I can see you maybe needing to just stand up for a minute. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I got here. The strict disciplines in 10 and 11 is our formula for living now. See, I didn't know that at some point. You would have asked me to do... How are you in 10 and 11? I would have said, I did them. I did them. My sponsor took me through all of the steps, and now I'm helping other people. I didn't even understand it, right? I want to tell you that. And if you're living in any kind of solution in prayer and meditation, you knew. You knew I didn't know what I was talking about. But I would tell you about how I sat down and did 10 and 11 with my sponsor. I had a sponsor who was amazing, and she took me through this work that's required to get free. She took me through this work. She took me through the book. We went line by line. We had dictionaries out. We met for hours and hours, and we went through this book, and she brought me up the way that you're supposed to bring a woman up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she was absolutely fantastic. And she was a vessel for God. I was untreated at the time, and I had been for some time, and she sat me down, and she said, I can't help you with these things you're complaining about in meetings, and how do you get your kids back, and how do you get this and that, but I can start to help you get free from all those things you're complaining about. I can help you lay your head on the pillow without shame, remorse, and guilt. I knew nothing about that. She told me that I could be at perfect peace and ease alone if I would just sit down with her and do the work required. And I said, okay, because at this point, I have the desperation, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And what happened was, she did take me through this work. somewhere along the line, I fell asleep inside the rooms, right? Can anybody relate to that? I don't know if anybody's here. Yeah, say the guy in the yellow shirt and Dan. And this one. I fell asleep inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because you guys weren't telling me about it anymore. You didn't stop telling me about it. I just stopped hearing you. I got blocked off. And I didn't know what I was missing. You know, I didn't know what I didn't know until I knew. Just didn't know what I was missing. I knew I was missing something. And here wasn't starting to feel real comfortable anymore. And I knew that I probably thought about getting drunk more than somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous should think about it. And I didn't want to tell you about that. And I would go back through the work and I would look at it alone by myself and I would open up the book and I would say, I got all these notes. I did what she told me to do. I followed the direction. And I went to a meeting one time and a good friend of mine today, didn't know him at the time, and he was speaking at the group that I went to, and he was speaking about the strict disciplines in 10 and 11. He was speaking about the maintenance of keeping your spirituality alive. He was speaking about a God of his understanding, and he was speaking about these practices like ask, turn, discuss, watch, tolerance, patience, pausing. These are the spiritual practices that get us to be free, to get us unblocked and undisturbed and connected with the channel of the God, right? This is how we stay in the beam. And what's the beam? It's love, right? Alcoholics Anonymous is all about love. It's about love. That's the language of AA, right? There was a girl outside earlier crying. I won't break her name and say who, but she was tearing up. And I said to her, that's beautiful, because what happens is that means your heart is open. It means that you're hearing the language of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the language of love. You're feeling love. You don't know why you're tearing up and feeling so emotional in this meeting. It's because you're feeling the love that we're all connecting to each other with right now. That's staying on the beam. And I want to stay in the beam. So how do I do that? These strict practices that it teaches me in 10 and 11. So I'm asleep in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and other fellowships. And don't get me wrong, if you would have seen me, I had, you know, double digits in years. And I chaired a lot of meetings and I made a lot of coffee still. And I planned a lot of baseball games, right? Picnics and baseball games. I did. And we did conventions, planned a lot of conventions and took a lot of girls to meetings and even sponsored a lot of girls. So it was hard for me to see what I was missing. I had the fellowship and I had unity and I had service. But what was I missing? And so this guy comes in and he's talking about these and he's free and he's light. I haven't felt light in a long time. I haven't had that childlike spirit that you see in each other when you have it, right? You can see Dave Reierman has this childlike spirit. He's just free and light and just here, right? That life of whatever that we took on in step three, right? We took on this life of whatever. A surrendered life, we see that too, right? What's a surrendered life? Whatever. It's whatever. Dog died, whatever. Can't make it to the meeting, going to be late to the meeting, supposed to speak from the meeting, whatever, it's going to be okay. It's just that surrendered life of trusting a power greater than yourself that comes through you and it's okay, it's just, it is whatever. I didn't understand that in 3, in 10 and 11 I get to experience that. So we see that in one another. When you're free and you have that childlike spirit, we're attracted to it and we want to be around it. So my friend, he spoke the meeting about that, and I thought, I want to be around that. Where is he going? What's he doing? I want to go there. I want to figure this out. I want to be in his space. I want to be in that kind of feeling that I get filled up when I'm around him. And I go to where he goes, and I hang out with the people he's hanging out with, and my spirit starts to be filled up just by being in your presence. And one of the hardest things I ever did, inside and outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, was go to him, go to another person. See, at the time, I put a lot of emphasis on my time. Earlier, when I started talking, I told you about how I'm not real impressed with my time or yours. At that time, I like to hang out with people that worship people with time, because I had that. I didn't have much more to offer you, but I had that. And so I have to go to somebody, you know, with maybe 2 or 3 years sober, and say to him, I'm scared. I'm missing something. I don't want to die. I don't want to miss it. And I don't even know what it is. And if you could just teach me, if you could show me, if you could follow me, if you'd stay with me, if you could just figure out what it is that I'm not doing that you're doing, I'll do it. And he didn't sit down and say, okay, well, what was 1, 2, and 3 like for you? He just looked at me and said, what's your inventory like? How's your prayer and meditation, and how's your inventory working for you? And that was the moment for me that I got it. I got what I was missing, right? I got it. Okay, I'm lying to you that I'm doing inventory. Well, I go over the questions in my head before I go to sleep. Not really, right? I don't have time for that. I can't even see it anyway. I can't see myself. So he sat down with me and we went over 10 and 11. Then I later said, do I have to do the steps over again? And he said, no, you went through them correctly. I don't understand why you would have to make a choice again. I already did that. What you need to do is stick in that 10 and 11, the strict disciplines of it, the spiritual practices. You'll be all right. And from that day to this one, I've not thought about a drink again. From that day to this one, I've gotten freer and freer as we go. And I don't know much about how that is, except for I learn how to stay undisturbed and unblocked. I learn how to open up that channel. I learn how to pray. One of you guys were talking about it earlier in prayer. The book says it doesn't work. We cannot pray for ourselves and it doesn't work, right? It doesn't, you know, and we do the, you know, if you just give me a job, I'll believe in you. What is that? And somebody said to me one time, if God exists, then he should tell me the lottery tickets. God's not real interested in lottery tickets, you know? So I say to him, how am I supposed to pray and never include myself? And I learn about how what I'm missing is connecting with you. Right? Really connecting with you on a deeper level. Dave Perry talks about you want to get closer to God, get closer to his kids. Hook up and connect with his kids. Help his kids. All God wants me to do is go out and help his kids, right? Now I have a new understanding of what we're really doing here. We're just all coming together for the purpose of recovery. Nobody higher than anybody else. You know, believe it or not, there is not a leader. Nobody's running this show. We're all, God don't have any grandkids, right? We're all just coming together and connecting as God's kids, and we're trying to help one another. And that's the beautiful part about Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what we're doing here, and that's what I was missing. I was missing the fact that picking you up and taking you to a meeting and taking you through the steps, not connecting with them, not experiencing them while I was doing it, but doing the service work that I was told I had to do to make me look good was not the deal. This wasn't the deal. I thought it was a deal. It wasn't a deal. So, that's why I chose 10-11. I get a little emotional when I talk about that experience. But when Dave Palmer called and he said, what steps would you like to talk about? I said, 10-11. Just like that. And we'd even like divide up, like maybe Chris should talk about it. I said, oh, I'm 10-11. And because it just sits with me, and I sit with 10-11 all the time. I don't ever want to go away from the prayer meditation and go away from continuing to take that inventory and looking all the time, right? I can't get to where I want to go if I don't know where I'm at, right? A girl said to me the other day, I don't like doing inventory because before I go to bed, I feel like I'm beating myself up and don't feel good. You're doing something wrong. If you don't feel good and you don't want to beat yourself up, it's not about me anymore. Now I want to look at it and say, did I harm you in any way? I'm not real concerned about me anymore. I want to know, have I harmed you in any way? Did I harm you? Not look at it. Did I not even know it? Do I need to look at something? I need to discuss it sometimes because my head, the problem center is in the mind, right? So my head's a mess. Doesn't always tell me the truth. So in 10, what we get to do is we get to watch. This is, a friend of mine said the other day, I believe the most powerful word in the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous is the word watch. Just watch. I no longer call you up and say, I don't know what's wrong, something's eating me up, and the thing is, I cheated on my boyfriend, and I did fight with that girl in the parking lot after the meeting, and I did gossip about her a lot, and I got really pissed off, and I started just going at her throat, and now I feel a little uncomfortable now. That's not how it goes. Just watch for it to crop up, right? I watch for it. I'm starting to feel a little resentful. I'm starting to feel a little bit undisturbed. I'm sitting with you, and you said something that's starting to make something inside of me not sit real well. I'm not feeling real good about that. I'm watching it to crop up. When it does, I instantly ask God to take that. I don't call you anymore, and you say, did you pray? Well, no. Well, hold on. I got to talk about what happened now. Right? How many times do we hear that? Did you pray? Well, we'll get to that. But what happened was she said, and then he said, no, the first thing we do is pray. I have a friend that always says, you bring to the throne before the phone. Right? We ask God before we ask anybody else. I ask God to remove it. I discuss it with you because I'm not real sure that I'm not telling myself lies. I can't see myself clearly all the time, so I discuss it with you. And sometimes the answer is, I think you're good. Let's go on. And sometimes it's, you know, you might want to go back and revisit that. You might want to go back to your boss and say, you know what? You're right. I've had an attitude lately, and I should probably calm down a little bit, and I was wrong for that. I get that direction from having women in my life that are God-centered, God-guided, and God-inspired. And they can see me in what I can't see. And I know that they've hit their knees today and they pray and they ask for that intuitive thought when I can't feel it for my own. But I can today for the most part. So we ask, we watch, we ask, we discuss. And then what do? Turn. Just turn. Right? The most beautiful spiritual practice I know is turn. Turning away from me. Turning away from me into you. This whole book is designed to turn me away from me and into you. When following this formula, we really can't go too wrong, right? When I'm feeling a certain way, I ask God to remove it, discuss it with you, and then I turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. It's amazing how quickly I can get out of me just by seeing how I can help you. Even earlier today, and I was getting a little, you know, I'm not sure I have anything to talk about today. Let me just go talk to a friend and see what she needs. Just for a minute, turn me away from me. Just keep turning me away from me into you. So, we're actually, you know what, you guys have brought your books, could open them. I'm going to open the book for a little bit, only because there's a couple things I'd like to read, and I know we haven't opened it much today. If you turn to 84, God bless David Palmer. He did all those steps in an hour. I've got 4 pages, 10's 4 paragraphs, and I have a whole hour to do it. I don't know if that's good or bad. But in step 10, it says that this thought brings us to step 10. What is that thought? What Dave just read in the end, the promises. And the thought was, it will materialize always if we work for them. That's the thought that we're left for at the end of 9. If we work for them, they will always materialize. It's huge, right? That's a huge promise. It's not saying that most of the time you're going to feel this way. It's saying that if you could possibly do this always and work for it, seek and take these actions, these verbs that are all through 10, if you could possibly do that, you'll feel these promises always. They're not going to go away. But you've got to keep seeking. You've got to keep these actions and these verbs in there. So it tells us that we have entered the world of the Spirit. So now we're in a whole new dimension just because we've cleaned up the wreckage of the past. We've made our wrongs right. We've done our inventory. We've surrendered to a power greater than ourselves. Now we've entered into this world of the Spirit. We're in a whole different place now. We're not in this material world anymore. We're not stuck in all this resentment and garbage that's up here. We're entering into this whole new world. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know nothing about it. Doesn't make sense to me, but I can see it in some of you, and I want to know what that is. So now I've entered into it, and I'm starting to feel this new power and energy flow in me. Bless you. And I want to hold on to that with everything I got. So now I've entered into this world of the Spirit. What does that mean? It means I get all these promises that 10 talks about too, and I get a sixth sense. It tells me that I'll have a sixth sense. It followed these directions carefully, it says. That means I couldn't have skipped on anything on 5. That means I didn't skip on any of the steps at all. That means if I follow them carefully, I took my hour, and I humbly asked, and I followed these directions carefully, that I can have this right here, right now. I can have a sixth sense. Right? What if they told you if you quit drinking, you're going to have a sixth sense? You know, what? What's that? I was thinking about maybe a house. Maybe a car, maybe a job, maybe not be sick anymore. You could have a sixth sense. It means I intuitively know not to go there. I intuitively know what to do next. I feel a sense of what's right and wrong. I feel a sense of taking that phone call, don't take that phone call. You know those feelings that we just think, I don't know what it was, but something just inside me was just telling me to go to that meeting tonight. I didn't want to, I wasn't feeling too well, but something inside of me was just saying, you know what, why don't you go over to that 7 o'clock down the street? Maybe it's not a solution-based meeting, and maybe they're not filled up with the Spirit, and maybe they're not on fire, and maybe they're not talking about the big book, and maybe they hate you. And they don't like it when you do it. But go there. Why don't you go there tonight? That's that sixth sense. It just tells me, just guides me. From movement to movement, I'm just guided through when living in the world of the Spirit. So it says on page 84, we've turned to 84, it says that this is not an overnight matter. First of all, it tells us that we have to grow with understanding and effectiveness, right? So now we're cleaned up. We're done the steps part. We're cleaned up. Now we have to do the maintenance step. What is that? We have to grow up. Really what it told me was I have to grow up. To grow up and stop whining and turn into you. Just go to you and see how I can be of helpfulness and usefulness to you. What Alcoholics Anonymous is all about, fitting myself into the maximum service of others. That's what I'm doing. I'm growing up, getting over myself now, and seeing if I can't use this in a way that's effective in my life. Taking my experiences and my wrongs, when I take my inventory and I see where it's wrong, taking those wrongs and turning them into how I can uniquely share that experience with you. And then it tells us after that that this is not an overnight matter, right? It's very important to remember that. We get to 10, or you can get to 10 like I did the first time and say, well, I did that. It's not an overnight matter. We keep doing it for a lifetime. It continues on and on. It doesn't, if you're sitting here and you're on this step or whatever it is and you don't feel it right away, we just keep doing it. It's seeking, and it's these are verbs that we keep doing. We actively go out there and we go at it. It says that, what we already went over, but it says that we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, and fear, right? Because all of our character defects come from dishonesty, resentments, and fears, right? We saw that in our fifth step. Somebody, God willing, sat down with us and didn't just listen to our fifth step, but sat down with us and showed us how we were inconsiderate, dishonest, full of fear, and self-seeking our entire lives. And that it caused every defect we'd ever had. And it caused every problem that we'd ever put ourselves in. Every situation, we put ourselves in a position to be harmed. Because somewhere along the line, we were full of fear. Had self-seeking motives. So it tells me that I'm to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, and fear. What step is that? 4, right? So now we're getting 4 through 9 into step 10. Step 10 is 4 through 9 on a daily basis. 4 through 9, spot checks, daily, 4 through 9, every day. We're not really done with 4 through 9 because we're doing it on a daily basis in 10. It says that when these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. At once we ask God to remove them. So again, we don't sit on it. Because sometimes we like to sit. You ever hear somebody say, well, sometimes I just like to feel bad. Why? Why do you just like to feel bad sometimes, though? I want to feel free and good. I want to just feel sorry for myself sometimes. I don't feel good. I don't want to just feel bad for a couple hours. And then I'll pray. Why? I'm asking God at once. At once. And this is my experience in my life today. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not always this way. But I absolutely can see myself turning to God instantly. I can have somebody right in front of me and say something to me that is hurtful to me, and instantly I go to God right here, right now. As they're still speaking, I'm starting to feel hurt God, you're here. Hook up. Let's connect. Because I'm going to look him in the eyes and I'm going to continue to listen to this. But my heart's starting to hurt. So can you just come in right now, instantly going to God with it? We discussed them. We already went over that immediately. Not tomorrow. Not next week. I get calls all the time. I got to tell you what I did last week. It was last Tuesday, and I've been a mess ever since. My phone worked last Tuesday too. We immediately discussed it with somebody. We make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. 8 and 9. Right? So we discuss, which is step 5, and then we make amends quickly. 8 and 9. Our list is who we've harmed, an 8, right here. We make amends like we did in 9. So we don't really need to go back to 9. At any point, if we can stay in the strict disciplines and practices of 10 and 11. If I can see when I harm you and make amends right now, we're good. And how often do our resentments, they're just because they build up, right? They're not even that bad. It's just because we let it build up. You would have thought you killed my mother, but really what you did was take my parking space, and I've hated you ever since. And so this is what happens. When we do it, we look at it immediately, it lightens it up. When we look at it right now, instead of holding a little bit inside, right? I had a guy explain it one time that it's like a water bottle. I can hold this water bottle, this coffee cup, but I could hold this coffee cup like this. I'm good. Like, it's not heavy, I promise you. It's what, 8 ounces? It's not even halfway full. I can do this. I can have a resentment, or gonna. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't say now we're not human, we no longer have any resentments. I'm gonna have them. You come back in a day or so and my arm hurts. You come back in a couple hours, my arm is going to hurt, right? A couple hours, I'm thinking, I can't hold this up anymore. This is really starting to burn in here. It's just 6 ounces. Why is it hurting? Because I'm holding on to it too long. If I held on to this all night long, my arm would really hurt. It'd probably have to take me to a hospital. I'm pretty sure I couldn't do it anyway, but I'd be in a lot of pain. That's what resentments are like, right? We hold on to them, they get heavier and heavier. They start to hurt. When we first grab that resentment, it didn't hurt so much. And that's why we do it immediately. And then, as we already talked about, turn. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone that we can help. It said that love and tolerance is our code. Love and tolerance is my code. You know why love and tolerance is my code? Because I've entered the world of the Spirit. That's why. I don't know anything about love and tolerance, and I do not know how to love and tolerate you. I don't like you very much, and I know you don't like me. Because you tell me. And I get it. And now you're saying that love and tolerance is my code. My code is my way of life. My code is everything about me. My code defines who I am. So if my code is love and tolerance, God must want for me love. God is love. He must want for me love. AA is a beam of love. All this is love and tolerance. How do I stay there? In the world of the Spirit. The spiritual practices, right? I can only have love and tolerance as my code because I can't do it and God does. Because it's in the world of the Spirit that God can come in and He can do amazing things, even letting somebody like me live a code of love and tolerance. See, I lived out in the streets for a long time. The book talks about that we seek the most sordid places to find approval and companionship. And it works. The book says it works momentarily. And we wake up with the four horsemen, right? It tells us that on page 151. And see, that was me. I was never comfortable with you. And I would seek out the most sordid of places to find approval and companionship. I had a beautiful home. I had a beautiful family. I came from a wonderful, fantastic place. And I would live around barrels of fires and alleyways in Newark and Trenton. I would go and I would feel uncomfortable. I would feel not okay with who I am. I would feel uncomfortable with my family. And so I would run and I would go to the streets. And what you taught me was my code was violence. You taught me that anger would work it out. Out there in the streets, they taught me that I could get whatever I needed if I was angry enough. They told me a lot of codes when I lived out in the streets, and I would go there purposely because I felt like I fit in there. And I came in here, and your guys' code was love and tolerance. I don't know anything about it. I threw chairs at your head when you spoke. I walked in this room about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was so angry. The only way that I knew how to communicate that I need help was to throw a chair at you. Call you out in the parking lot and say, you want to fight? Nobody would ever fight with me. And they say, no, Robin, we don't want to fight. And just keep coming back. We'll love you till you love yourself. And I say, it makes no sense. I want to fight. And nobody wants to fight. We love you, Rob. Just keep coming back. And I get it, because I was angry. And I couldn't tell you, you know what? I know I seem like an angry, violent mess off the streets, but I'm a scared and frightened little girl. I am absolutely scared to death of you. Scared to death of love. I'm scared to death of the love that you give to me. I see you guys giving each other love. And I know I got to make up a damn good story for you guys to give me love, because you're not going to like who I am. So I don't know anything about fitting into a world where everybody that surrounds me is practicing love and tolerance. But you guys taught it to me. You taught me that love and tolerance was my code. And you taught me how, by this formula here. And you taught me it was through prayer and meditation. And you taught me that it wasn't just for the people I like. It wasn't just for my friends. And it wasn't just for people. It was love and tolerance for the concepts and for the way that life just is. It's loving on all levels, no matter what. And it's not tolerating, like, you know what? I really don't like that Dave's sleeping right now, but I really don't like that he's kind of a jerk. And not Dave, but he's kind of a jerk, and he kind of rubs me the wrong way, and he don't really live his life right, and I judge the hell out of him, and I don't like him, but it tells me I have to tolerate him. It's not tolerance. I used to think that was tolerance. Even though I don't like you, I'll tolerate you. It doesn't feel good. When somebody, bless you, when somebody tolerates me, it doesn't feel good to me. Tolerance is just accepting you for who you are, meeting you where you're at, right here, right now, no matter what. Even when there's hate in you, even when there's sadness in your eyes, whatever it is, I just love who you are. The God in me falls in love with the God in you. I see every defect that comes in front of me, and how close I am to that, and how I was there last Tuesday or 2 months ago, and I'll be there on Sunday. I don't see any difference between me and you, regardless of what defects you might be acting out on today that I'm not, what defects I'm going to act on later. I just love you. So you taught me how to do that, and I don't know how to do that on my own, but I know that if I'm hooked up and connected with God, with this power greater than myself, this creator of the universe, if I can get hooked up and connected and walk in that sunlight of the Spirit and actually feel that deep down inside, how could I feel anything else? How could I have hate for you? If God lives deep down inside of me and I feel His energy flowing through me and I've entered into a world of a Spirit, I can't have hate for you. That's why it says that we were reborn. That our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Not just some of it, not just some of the times, my entire outlook upon life has changed. And part of that is because this taught me how to get rid of self-pity and dishonesty and self-seeking motives. I don't know about you, I was so full of self-pity. I suffered from self-pity to the point that it absolutely paralyzed me. I was just grounded in self-pity. And I'm not saying like when I was drinking, like when I was two. I didn't have what I was supposed to have. I wasn't given what I was supposed to be given. I never had it good enough. Nobody ever gave me enough attention. It was never good enough. I did not understand what the world was so happy about, because I felt so sorry for myself. It was this black cloud of self-pity that came over me. And it was there. It was there when I woke up, and it was there when I went to sleep. And it was there. No matter how hard I tried to get away from me, the black cloud of self-pity went with me. And in 11, it tells me that I'm to wake up and ask God to remove self-pity. It's almost like these 100 people knew that we suffer from self-pity. And the first thing we got to do in the day is ask God to remove the self-pity. I went off the side there a little bit. So it says that love and tolerance is our code. which means now that we cease fighting with anything and anyone. And I think Dave brought it up earlier, but I cease fighting with anything and anyone. That means you. That means no matter what your opinion is on me or how you do things, I cease fighting. Not only with alcohol and drugs, but I cease fighting with your ideas are maybe different than mine. That's okay. 100 roads of Chicago, just take one. I don't care how you get there. Seized, it's a beautiful spiritual practice. Stopped, halted. Don't fight. I no longer have to fight a drink, which I did in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, fighting the urge to drink. Who wants to be here sitting in a chair fighting the urge to want to get high? So freedom in that. Heard a guy say the other day, every time there's a beer commercial on the TV, especially during football season, it's really hard because when there's a beer commercial on the TV, I got to change channel because it makes me want to drink. Now, I'm 17 years sober, and I've been doing this for a long time, and I know that how bad I want to drink when I see beer commercials, so I change the channels. What kind of way of life is that? There's no freedom in that. God love him. Definitely went to talk to him after the meeting, but only because we don't want to live in that kind of... I'm fighting alcohol. I've never won before. Now I just get to cease fighting. I'm to fight it. I'm to talk to you about it. Deep down in my heart, I'm just not fighting anything or anyone anymore. And so I'm at peace with you and my surroundings. It says that by this time, sanity will have returned. Right? That's because we've entered the world of the Spirit. I can't bring sanity back. And I was insane. Sanity starts to just return. It doesn't tell me by this time I can start to have some sane thoughts again. And if I do start, it just tells me it returns. It just automatically comes back to me. It's returned. I'm good. I don't have them crazy ideas anymore. Well, I do have crazy ideas sometimes, but my mind doesn't go to slashing your tires. My mind doesn't go to, you know what I should do? Pack up the car and go to Montana. I'll find somebody with a horse ranch. Okay, I said that the other day. Steve called me, but I was joking. But that's where my mind used to go, these crazy, insane ideas that made me feel like I was schizophrenic. I talk about it all the time. I sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time believing I was schizophrenic, believing that if you found out I was schizophrenic, you would definitely ask me to leave. Her different personalities are coming out again. We don't know which one we're talking to. She's not alcoholic. She needs to go. That's what they were going to get together and have some kind of group meeting about me and say that. And they were going to ask me to leave because I wasn't really alcoholic because I'm so nuts. You don't understand. I'm nuts. You guys seem sane and normal, and I'm so nuts. Like, what if you find out I'm not an alcoholic and you find out I'm insane, then I'm going to have to go. And it was the first place I felt like I belonged, and I don't want to go yet. So I'm going to pretend like I'm alcoholic. Tells me that sanity will just return. Seldom be interested in liquor. We recoil from it like a hot flame. We will react sanely and normally, and we will find that this will happen automatically. Again, it just happens automatically. I don't have to figure out what to do next. It just happens automatically. I totally didn't look at the time, but when did I start?
5 minutes ago.
Feels like an hour and a half. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. We saw that in 4 and 5. I certainly hope you saw that in 4 and 5. I hope you sat down with somebody that showed you that alcohol was not your problem. Chris talked about it earlier. If you're still hating alcohol, you're still hating the wrong person. There's something wrong with this, right? So it tells us that we learn this. Or how did we take on a new attitude in 4 and 5? When we saw that first column, we saw that all that was caused by that selfishness and dishonesty and self-seeking motives and fear, all that is what caused those harms. Not alcohol. Not crack. Not heroin even. Those defects is what's caused my harms. And so now I have a new attitude towards life. I have a new attitude towards you. I no longer feel sorry for me. It says it just comes, and that's a beautiful mirror. One of the promises in here, it just comes. You don't have to ask how or how to make it happen. This is how. And it just comes to you. If it hasn't just come to you, you just missed something, and that's okay. Just get with somebody if it's not coming to you, because it just comes. This is the miracle of it, right? The miracle is not that I didn't drink or drug in 14 and a half years. The miracle is that I can be sane and normal. That I can feel love and tolerance. The miracle is that I'm not fighting it anymore. The miracle is I'm free from it. It tells us it just comes, and that's the miracle. They say, what do they say? Don't leave 5 minutes for the miracle? Maybe that's what they, maybe they just need to go to 10:11 and look at what's 5 minutes for the miracle. Maybe we're missing something in some steps here. It says it will be safe and protected. We'll be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. So again, I'm going to go back to my personal experience with that. I've never felt safe in my life. The first feeling I can possibly remember was being 4 years old and scared to death in my room, hiding in a corner. Scared to death, always. Scared of you. Scared that I wasn't good enough. Scared of everybody in school. God help me, I couldn't do it. I dropped out in like the sixth grade or something. I just couldn't do it. I was just so frightened. I was just so scared. I didn't tell you I dropped out because I was cooler than you. But I was just too scared to keep going. I've never felt safe yet. I seeked it my whole life and didn't know it. I would come in here and I would not know what I suffered from. I would not know what I was looking for, but you taught me. You showed me what I was looking for. I just didn't know it. You showed me that I wanted to feel peace. I wouldn't have told you, will you please help me stop drinking? I want to feel peace and serenity. I want to know what it's like to be placed in a position of neutrality. Feel safe and protected. I had a deep, deep, burning desire to feel safe and protected. I know this is goofy, but you know that movie Mask with Cher? Did you guys see that movie Mask with Cher? And she was a drug addict. Remember when she hung out in that biker gang? I wanted to be her so bad. I wanted to be just like her. Even though she was a junkie, that was all good. That was fine. Because she was protected by this motorcycle gang. No matter what she did, they had her back. And I had never experienced that. Even out in the streets, you'd have my back for a little bit, but if I crossed here and did the wrong thing or didn't help out in the right way, I was out. Wasn't really ever protected, but that's what I was searching for, to feel safe and protected. And what happened was, through 10 and 11, I found out that feeling of being safe and protected is not from a motorcycle gang, and it's not even from you. It's from deep down inside of me. I can feel safe and protected because I'm hooked up with a power that is so awesome and so fantastic that he protects me no matter what. Even towards alcohol, even towards you, I'm just okay in here. So that is our experience. It is not our opinion. This is not what we think that you might want to try to do. It says that is our experience. 100 men and women wrote this book, and it was their experience. I believe it worked for them. And this is my experience today. And it tells us that this is how we'll react, this sane and normal attitude. This is how we'll react, this whole new outlook upon life. This is how we'll react as long as we stay in fit spiritual condition. It doesn't say if you sat down and took step 10, if you read it, if you read it every day. It's not about that. If we stay in fit spiritual condition, staying in the world of the Spirit. That we'll continue to react in this way. When I start to turn back into me, the ego comes back in. All that goes away. I can only experience this when I'm hooked up with God, hooked up with you, trying to help God's kids, having that be my purpose, filled with love and tolerance is how I keep, and if I can keep in that fit spiritual condition, I can keep this going. So it tells us that, I'm going to skip on a little bit. Clearly, we all know that we're not cured of alcoholism, that it is a daily reproof contingent on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. So, daily reprieve, right? So it tells me in step three, we have now taken on a new employer. I have a new employer. I have to show up every day. If I do not show up, I don't have a new employer. I'm probably fired. I have to keep showing up every day. It's contingent upon this, a daily reprieve. I've got to do this every day. I'll ask somebody, they'll say, I'm a little jammed up, I'm feeling a little comfortable, I'm not real comfortable where I'm at. How's your prayer and meditation like? How's your inventory? Well, it's been a couple weeks, but that's not the point. It only takes a day. Tells us every day. Chris says it all the time that our spirituality expires every 24 hours. I believe that is true. I believe that is true just for me. I absolutely believe it with all my heart. It is every day. I can go to Holy Family and learn about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can sit down with a new girl. I can listen to a fifth step and I can take some inventory and I can lay my head in the pillow without any shame, remorse, and guilt. And I can wake up, not pray, not meditate, and think F you by noon. I'll cut you, bitch, comes out of me like that. I always say but that's that it'll come out like that. It's daily. A friend of ours died recently. We used to have long talks about spiritual things, about the different spiritual books that we were reading. We talk for hours and hours about the Sermon on the Mount. We'd have these conversations about how we just connect and understand and how God is so awesome and fantastic and working in our lives. And it was beautiful. And we would talk about this on a Tuesday. Hours on the phone talking about how amazing God is. And I believe I can feel it in Him. Like we were talking about earlier, when you can just see when somebody is free, when somebody has that childlike spirit. We can see when somebody has a surrendered life and they're living that whatever life. We can just see it in one another. We just want to be around it. I believed Him. I don't believe the words He was saying. I felt it. I felt it on Tuesday and it was dead Saturday morning. I believe that it's entirely possible that this book is true, that it's daily. He may have had that on Tuesday. Woke up Wednesday a little pissed off and angry at somebody. Didn't pray and meditate again on Thursday. Didn't hook up and connect with you. Didn't go out and try to help others. And by Friday, I was feeling real uncomfortable. By Saturday, he came down to AC and he died the next morning. I take it seriously when it tells us that it's a daily reprieve. Can't miss a day. Says, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. That this is a vision that we must carry into our lives. Always. Everything I do. This is God's vision for me. If God is love and God wants love for me, if my will is my thoughts and my action, my life is my actions, what is God's? Am I constantly looking at what God wants for me? It's His vision with me. Am I carrying that through? And how do I do that? By not being so self-centered anymore. I think every speaker today talked about self-centeredness being our problem. I pray for God's will, not mine, be done. My first step in not being so self-centered. Again, it tells us if we've carefully followed the directions, we've begun to sense a flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop that vital sixth sense, right? So we already went over that. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Some of you in this room do and some of you don't. But that when you do, you just connect and get it. There's no words for it. It's that energy that's flowing through us. And it feels new, and it feels new all the time. Because I've made conscious contact with God today. Just now, it's new. And you know what that feels like when you're praying this way. They teach us a lot about prayer in this book. And then they tell us that it's okay to go on and find other books. Tells us that in step 11. It's not the only way. Bill W. said that AA was a spiritual kindergarten. The book tells us that if we do not expand upon our spiritual life, that we will not be able to handle the certain trials and low spots that lie ahead. Tells us that. There's certainly going to be low spots. It's not all pretty. There's going to be trials. And it doesn't say, as long as you did what you did yesterday, you'll be able to handle what happens tomorrow. It's not true. Hear people say all the time, as long as I did what I did yesterday, it kept me sober, and I'll just keep doing it today, and I'll be fine. If I did what I did yesterday for 14 years, I'd be throwing chairs. I've got to keep expanding upon it. And it tells us that we can do that through, that. See, we're religious people are right. We can take other books and we can look at, we read Emmett Fox and we read Sermon on the Mount and A Course in Miracles and A New Earth and Awakening and these books that bring us in different spiritual, because now we're awakened. I'm awakened now and I can hear and I can feel and I'm open to it. So I read these other spiritual books and it brings me a little bit further and we just go out and I'm seeking. Seeking a way to expand upon the spiritual life. Because if I'm just doing what I did yesterday, because it worked, and I come home one day, and my boyfriend had slept with the neighbor, and so I asked him to leave, and then my mom called and said, I have cancer, and my job called and said, you've been valuable to us for 11 years now, but you're going to have to go. Just a corporate downsizing, you're going to have to go. And mom says, you know, Robbie, I got cancer, I'm not sure I'm going to make it up. My heart is broken. My mother, my best friend, and the only person I know unconditional love from is dying. And I lost my job. Thank God I'd been expanding upon the spiritual life, not just sitting with half measures, not just saying a third step prayer every day. I was actively out there seeking God. Goes on to tell us, if we follow the dictates of a higher power and continue to walk hand in hand with the new man, that we can presently live in a new and wonderful world, regardless of what our current circumstances are. We'll live in a new and wonderful world. Doesn't matter what's going on around us. We'll be like that fish in the lake. Now, you really have to tell me if I'm going over.
You're fine.
Chris? I have no idea what time it is or when I started. I don't like this at all. Nobody will tell me. Okay, so... That's pretty much, you know, our spiritual actions. The verbs in 10 are what we're doing. We're looking for those verbs in 10. Watch, ask, discuss, turn, seize, tolerate, pause. All those verbs that are all throughout 10, that's what we're actively doing. When it says the book constantly tells us, that's great, now we need to do more. That's good stuff, now more action. So we take these action words and 10 and we use them, we go out and we actively watch and turn and seek and pause. So in 11, and it tells us what we're going to do upon awakening and when we retire at night. Tells us that we're going to seek this conscious contact with God that we've just established through prayer and meditation. I don't know about you, but I sat in the chairs of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in these rooms for a long time talking about prayer and meditation, having no idea what meditation was. None. Zero. Didn't know. Really didn't know. My mom was real into meditation, and it seemed a little weird. And I was pretty sure that's not what you guys were doing. So I wasn't real sure about to ask about that. I got into meditation. I lived out in San Francisco and took a journey into meditation and like I talked about earlier, I later just fell asleep and how did I do that? I stopped meditating. I stopped that prayers and the active verbs in 10. I've recently taken on a new journey in meditation and it's been a beautiful experience. It tells me that I need to do this, and there's certain things I need to do in meditation at night. It tells me that prayer and meditation is the key to keeping this conscious contact with God. I spent the last 22 days now with 17 minutes of meditation in the morning and 7 minutes at night. I can tell you that it's a personal journey. The book starts out in the beginning talking a lot about we, and it tells us in our literature later that in 11, we're on a personal journey here, to find that meditation that works for us. we can all help one another and what works for you and whatnot. And I was going to do a guided meditation today, but I don't know if I have time or not. I have no idea. And we'll just skip it. But it's a personal journey.
Keep talking.
All right. So I go out there and I sit with it, right? And I've learned a lot of different ways that for me stills all this craziness and it calms it down. I've got to get away from me. I've got to get away from me. And sitting with you and doing extensive work and sitting across the kitchen table with a new girl absolutely gets out of me. But as soon as you walk away, this is still a mess. And the problem still centers in the mind. 60, 70, 80,000 thoughts a day. I will do anything to get away from me. If I don't meditate, I'm stuck with me all day long without even at least a 2-minute break. Sometimes I take the promises that are in 10, and the promises are 11 and throughout the book, and I just sit with them. Take them one by one. We talk about the promises in 9 and 10. We talk about them all the time. Every meeting, you guys probably say them and hear them dozens of times a week. Today, I'll take one of the promises and just sit with it. Sit with it in meditation. Do I feel like I'm in a new, wonderful world? Is love and kindness really my way of life? Has sanity returned, and do I feel that in the depths of my soul? The conscious contact with God I feel today through the prayer and meditation, and it doesn't happen right away, right? That relationship with God that we started in the beginning, way back, when it didn't really mean so much, now we get to establish what that means. We get hooked up and connected with it. We start to experience it in 10 and 11. I had a moment the other day, I was driving, 5 minutes? Oh, perfect, thank you. At a moment the other day, I was driving down the street in Atlantic City, and some of you may know it's not the prettiest place. But the sky was purple and pink, and it was amazing. It was absolutely breathtaking, and I felt this sense of energy and power flow in me that talks about. But that's the way I can describe it. I felt God's presence with me in a way that was so overwhelming, I just wanted Him to back off a second. I'm trying to drive here, like it's too overwhelming. I'm not even asking for you to come in right here, right now, and God's just filling me up to the point where I feel like I can't keep driving the car. So I pull over and I find a nice little bridge and I watch the sunset and I'm crying and I'm thanking God, as I do throughout the day, every day, conscious contact. I don't get up and pray for 45 minutes. I'm making a grocery list 3 minutes into it anyway. I'm making conscious contact all the time. Little prayers. Thank you, God. Constantly. Just thank you is enough sometimes, all throughout the day. Constantly hooking up. It says that upon awakening, anyway, so I pull over and I feel God's presence in a way that I could not describe to you. If you understand it, you do. If you don't, you don't. And that's okay. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just get with somebody that does and do the work required to get there. But what I'm telling you is that I can feel God with me, and the presence is so overwhelming that I tear up. A girl called me a few weeks ago, and she said, listen, I'm sick and suffering inside the rooms, and I'm dying of untreated alcoholism, and I will do anything if you would help me. Show me. I can't help her. God can't. Show me a way to God. And the feeling that I feel deep down inside of me is so overwhelming with God's love. All I can do is instantly say, thank you, God, for awakening her. Selfishly, I want to say thank you for using me as a channel, but all I know is that girl's been suffering for a very long time, and now she's being awakened to a new way of living and a solution. And I'm so filled up, I have to hang up the phone and just sob and cry. Because I can see the transformation in you that God is getting right before my very eyes. I don't see the transformation in me anymore. You guys, there's a lot of people that are around when I came around. You'll tell me stories about what it was like. And I remember, like Chris was talking about, I can remember what happened. I don't feel it. But I get to experience God every day through you. I get to experience when the new girl comes and sits down at the kitchen table and she starts to look me in the eye again. She's not looking at her feet anymore and the light starts to go off a little bit. When she comes in and says, "Did you see the sunset? The sunset was amazing, Robbie. Did you see that?" And I think, "I always see the sunsets, but you did?" She said, "Yeah." That's when God, then I see God happening in you, and the transformations happening before my very eyes, and the girls that were broken are starting to become women of dignity and honor. The girls that were hopeless are getting hope. They're talking about sunsets instead of boys. That's a miracle of it. So it tells us that upon awakening, and we'll wrap it up with 11 here, but it says on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We do that. I'm not real good at it. I don't usually have a lot of plans. It's just whatever. It's whatever. I consider our plans, though. And it says before we begin, we ask God. When the book says that we ask, when anything says we ask God, that means we pray. So it tells me before I begin, I pray. That does not mean before I start my first business meeting at work. It doesn't mean before I get the kids to school, before I begin my day. Open my eyes, meet God. That's what it's taught me. I will open my eyes and meet my screaming kids that want more money for school today, forgot their uniforms, and want to know why I didn't sign their test report that they flunked. And I'm pissed off before the coffee's done. I am absolutely pissed off before the coffee's even done. I start, it says before I begin, means before I meet the kids, before they get out of bed, I at least ask God to remove me, divorce me from self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. And then I go beyond my day. And I go back to prayer and I go back to my meditation after the kids are off to school. And that's just my routine right now. And it will change and it will evolve into something else. But right now, that's my routine. That's what keeps me right here right now. Tells me before I begin. I've got to do that before my eyes open. I open eyes, meet God. I promise you, my first thought every day is God. It is. My first thought every day is this is beautiful. What are we going to do today? God, fill me up. Use me like a hollow bone. Fill me up. Use me as a vessel. Let me do your work. Whatever it is you want me to do, I will do for you today. No questions asked. I've been asking a lot of questions my whole life. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm just here. Whatever. Hands open, whatever. I personally hit my knees because I need to remember I cannot do it alone. So I humbly hit my knees as soon as I awaken. As an admission that I cannot do anything beyond waking up without God. It tells us that we ask for that divorce and to be divorced, which is permanent, right? Marriage is not permanent, right? We've learned that in the last few years. I think we're like at a 40% success rate. Divorce is permanent, for the most part. But it tells us to be divorced from self-pity. So remember earlier we talked about that. I suffer from self-pity, so I'm going to be divorced from self-pity. And under these conditions, we employ our mental facilities with insurance, and it tells us that our thought life will be placed on a much higher level. I'm no longer talking about him and what he drives and what he's doing and what she's doing and what lip gloss looks best on me. My thought life is on a whole different level. I'm thinking about how I can get hooked up and connected with you. I honestly am, for the most part. Now, I can go wrong. I can absolutely get jealous, the worst human emotion, and I can turn, and I can not do this, and it goes wrong on me. But for the most part, I'm here to tell you that for me, my experience today is that I think about you guys all of the time. That pie chart that we talk about, what are you worshiping? What are you thinking about the most? If I'm thinking about him, I'm worshiping him. Am I thinking about God most of the time? Am I thinking about financial insecurities? Am I thinking about him? Am I thinking about you? And if you're not coming to me saying, Robbie, can you help me out with something? Can we do some step work? Can you help out this new girl I met? If you're not coming to me with that, I'm thinking about, I wonder who I could call. I wonder who I could get hooked up with. I wonder who I could go out and find and see what they need. I wonder how Tara is doing. I've been thinking about so-and-so for a while. I think I'll call Jim and see how he's doing. These are my thoughts today, placed on a much higher level. Okay, so now am I over?
Now you're over.
Okay, good. It tells us that we conclude this period with meditation and prayer, and it gives us our formula for living, what we do. You know, I have page 86, 87 buddies that we work with, and I write out my inventory at night. It tells us the 12 questions. I'm going to go over real quickly, and I'll wrap it up, and I won't go into each one, but it tells us that at the end of the night, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, and afraid? I cannot look at my day and say, wow, I got up and I went to work, so kids are going, I met with a new girl, I listened to the footsteps, I went to a meeting, I went home, I'm good. I have to say, was I dishonest? Was I self-seeking? Was I full of fear? Where was I wrong? Did I have self-seeking motives? When I think that way, I can remember I was impatient on the highway. When I'm thinking about the defects, so it tells me that's how I have to look at it. Was I afraid? Do I owe an apology? In step 9, again, we keep doing 4 through 9 and 10 and 11. Have I kept something to myself that should have been discussed with another human being? Am I keeping a secret? Step 5, do I have any secrets? Is there something I'm not telling somebody? Was I kind and loving? And for me, so it's the way my experience with it, how I'm doing, I break it up. Was I kind and was I loving? Because they're two separate things. Was I kind and loving throughout my day? If I wasn't, okay. It's only in the times that I fail that I learn and I grow in understanding and effectiveness. So when I see that I fall short and I see where I'm wrong and I see where I'm harmful or I see where I need spiritual growth, that's where the miracle comes in. That's where it's beautiful. I want to see. I want anything that awakens me to me so that I can grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's what I do by asking myself those 12 questions that are laid out on page 86. It is clear-cut instructions. It's right there in how we do this step. It says that after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness. I don't know about you. I ask God to forgive me every single night I've done wrong. Always. Always asking God's forgiveness. I'm not always going to you and asking you to forgive me, but it tells me that after I'm done my review, before I go to sleep, it's a few-minute process, but I'm going to ask God's forgiveness for the things I've done wrong, particularly if I've hurt anybody else. And I have a notebook, and I line it out, and I say what corrective measures need to be taken, and I share my notebook with other people in my life that can help me look at that and see what corrective measures might need to be taken. But this is how I can go throughout the day with inspiration, and it tells us about that we intuitively know, and we know we look for inspiration. When we don't find inspiration automatically, we just sit and we pause. It says we pause when agitated, and we pause when faced with indecision, and we ask God to show us some kind of insight, some kind of inspiration of what to do, and we go about our day hooking up with God's kids. That's pretty much all. I thought I had nothing, right? It tells us, to wrap it up on 88, the best paragraph in the whole big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is, it works, it really does. That's it. It works, it really does. It's a whole paragraph. And then it tells us after that that we found this peace and this new freedom. We've entered into this world of the spirit, and all these things that we just talked about, these actions and these spiritual practices that we bring.